I'm Mike Asnald, and welcome to the Arts Council of Greater Baton Rouge's AC23 Plus Artist Legacy Series podcast. This is a series where we talk to artists who are doing amazing things in the areas of the arts, including performance, education, production, as well as arts advocacy. We record this series in the Virginia and John Nolan Black Box Studio, as well as in the Jan and Bill Grimes Recording Studio here at the Cary Siraj Community Arts Center. Be sure to visit artsbr.org for more information on all the great things we are doing here at the Arts Council of Greater Baton Rouge. Hope you enjoy the podcast series, and thanks for tuning in.
Yeah, you're right.
Hey.
Mr. David Henson.
It's great to be here.
I'd like to welcome our AC 23 Plus listeners and viewers to another session. I'm Mike Asnault, Director of Arts and Education here at the Arts Council of Greater Baton Rouge. And today, I have a long time friend, because we go quite a ways back.
Quite a ways back.
Mr. David Henson. Welcome, David.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Mike.
How far back? I've known you since high school.
High school. I remember seeing you, becoming aware of you when I was a junior.
Were you stalking me, man?
Couldn't help it. You were everywhere, you know.
High school.
Huh? High school, you know, seeing some of our friends that played in different high school jazz mm-hmm. bands, we would see each other out there, and you could tell, like, not everybody in everybody's jazz band was like a jazz person, you know.
Right.
And so when you would see somebody play in another band that was a little deeper into it, you kind of made a note of it. And
mm-hmm.
Your band was had a couple notable players in it. You and Keith Simoneau.
Keith Simoneau, yeah.
Were a great little combo.
Who is continues to be a mutual friend of ours.
So it's really fun to have some of these friends still in town.
And You were in Zachary, right?
I went to Zachary High School.
Yeah. Well, I've known you quite a while, and I've watched you do so many things in music in our community that really mean a lot. You know, not only education's a big part of that, because I also later got reconnected with you as teachers, colleagues in the East Baton Rouge school system, primarily working in the Gifted and Talented program. However, you were teaching prior to that, teaching strings, right, and
mm-hmm.
more regular music?
Teaching orchestra.
Yeah.
Doing string programs.
Well, let's get into that in a minute, but I want to start at the beginning, Dave. So tell the listeners, where are you from, and how, I'm always curious about the formative years, like how someone gets interested in music or the arts, and There's always tends to be some key player, some key mentor, or something that really helps steer that person along. So what was that for you?
So my family was kind of musical. My mom and dad loved to sing together,
mm-hmm.
and my mother played the piano. They were always rehearsing choir music for church, you mm-hmm. know. So I would hear the bass part and the alto part with mom playing both of those parts on the piano mm-hmm. for my parents to sing. So that was part of it, just kind of being around music practice. I've come to realize how important that was in my upbringing. So mm-hmm. both my sisters played the piano, practiced the piano, and my younger sister, she's older than me, but the younger of the two,
mm-hmm.
Melinda, played the guitar. And was always practicing the guitar and tuning the guitar.
Down. Right.
So I was always around that kind of activity, and it just seemed natural. And I would be surprised when I'd go to other friends' houses, and they weren't doing the same thing.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So that was a big part. We grew up in North Baton Rouge in the North Highlands neighborhood around Plank and Evangeline. A lot of great music talent from up in that neighborhood too, mm-hmm. that are local. We'll talk about that in a minute too.
Yeah.
So I lived there and began to pick up just kind of an interest in music. Our neighborhood had a few different people that had bands of their own in the neighborhood. So I would hear music coming from houses as I'd ride my bike around the neighborhood. So it gave me a real interest in getting involved with playing music. Like that just fascinated me that you could do that,
mm-hmm.
you know, get an instrument, get some people together, start a band, and that just blew my mind.
So it really, with many people that I've talked to, it's not until they get to school where that starts, their exposure to music happens. But it kind of happened before, or earlier for you, right? Just in the house.
Yeah, in the house. There were just so many casual things that were going on. My dad played the baritone ukulele, which I picked up later on. He showed me my first chords. And even before I began to play it, I was always kind of like holding it, pretending to play it.
Right.
You know, and I I had a tennis racket that I would air guitar everything, you know.
Guilty, I used to do that too.
And I have really, as an educator, I've really come to see that as valuable experience for a kid, for a young person, because you never play any wrong notes. Yeah. You know,
right.
You learn all these rhythms. You're able to kind of take in the music and enjoy the music without being committed to remembering how to play it, you know. So as a kid, you just get to, like, play your rhythms, pretend to play, get into the music, learn, listen.
Hmm.
I think it's just a really, whenever I see young kids doing that, I try to, like, give them a little extra dap, like, keep doing that.
I've never thought about that until now. Like, the idea of, like, playing air guitar or something like that with something in your hands.
Yes.
Because, yeah, you aren't producing any sound, but you are kind of getting into the groove, if you will, of the physicality, a little bit, of playing an instrument.
Absolutely.
Feeling it. You
know. And I can remember playing, doing this, and I would play the most important events of the song.
Hmm.
So
you're hearing structure.
Yeah. So I'm hearing, you know, when it was the when it was the guitar solo, playing the guitar part. When it was the drum break, I'm playing the drum break. Mm. When it's the keyboard break, I'm playing the keyboard break.
Right.
So you learn this little order and form and scope and scale and all that kind of stuff.
Right. That's cool. Well, so let's move forward then. You, I'm assuming at some point in school you got involved with a music program of some sort.
Yeah. Fifth grade, I kind of started with the string teacher.
Okay.
At North Highlands Elementary, and I played the violin for a couple of years. And like a lot of kids, I didn't read. I didn't learn how to read then.
Mm-hmm.
I had a hard time settling down to learn how to read and all the lines and everything and dots. Kind of gave me a hard time. But it was easy for me because I was listening to my neighbors and playing what they were playing. So I was never detected, you know.
You flew under the radar.
That I wasn't reading. And I did that in the sixth grade. And then I, on the last day of sixth grade, I remember that I was finally allowed to take home a bass for the summer because I was looking for a change. You know, I realized, like, I'm in the back of the violin section, you know. I don't seem to be doing much back here. I want to do something else. I want to do something more fun, you know.
Right.
So I was a tall kid, and so my teacher said, man, you need to play the bass. I need bass players. So I took a bass home for the summer. The last day of sixth grade, I called my dad. The buses had already gone home, and here I am in the parking lot with a bass. You
it's
know.
Not just you. It's a bass.
No, it's me and the bass. So that began that summer. My parents got me some private lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And I started studying with a series of different teachers that are all notable Baton Rouge people.
Yeah.
So I started taking bass lessons then, and I got a chance to go back and learn to read all over again on a new instrument after I'd already had the experience of kind of trying and failing on another instrument.
Right.
But I was ready for it then. I was more ready for it.
Was it something about the resonance of the bass? Low frequencies or something that just resonated with you?
Yeah, for
Did
sure.
Did you know at that point?
I thought it was a great, I couldn't believe how cool it was. I mean, just the size of it was just an enormous, how ridiculous is this instrument? It's just enormous. Who carries these things around? But my sister had kind of turned me on to the idea of and my dad directed my attention to what bass players do. They always thought it was kind of cool. Like, listen to that bass player down there doing, you know. And my dad would sing the part to the song that he heard the bass player doing. And that taught me a lot, too, that you could isolate with your hearing. You could listen to a single instrument and isolate it and kind of learn about it.
Right.
So, yeah, my sister and my dad both kind of prepared me for that.
Huh. Is it also fair to say that you're being exposed to lots of different types of music?
Oh, for sure. Being the youngest of four, I got to hear all of my siblings.
Oh, everything they're into.
Yeah, all the stuff that they're into. And they're all into different stuff because they're all different ages.
Right.
You know, we were talking about funky music and Gary Wright and Our Love Is Alive and all this kind of stuff.
Love that tune.
I remember my older sister, Karen, had won a record off of like WFMF.
Yeah.
Back in the day. And she had won that record.
Mm.
And as I remember it, we went and got that record and it was around the house. And I remember listening to that, just thinking like, man, that is some funky space music.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. But yeah, so there was her. My brother was more into like Earth, Wind, and Fire, but he also turned me on to George Benson and Willie Nelson.
Yeah.
So he had and he showed me like, oh, you can have a wide range of interests, you know, musical interests. You know, my sister was the guitar player, so she would take me to band practice every now and again or take me to a guitar shop, you know, and do that kind of stuff. So that's kind of what I was really well positioned at that point to do what I did next, just learning some instruments, beginning to learn how to play the bass, learning how to interact with my teachers better, get, you know, learn what the bass player is supposed to do, have a good time, have good ideas, know what everybody else is doing,
right?
You know, so that was kind of my early experience that attached me to the bass.
So when you got the bass is in your hands now, is most of the music that you're learning, or is a lot of it by ear?
Yeah.
Like listening to these people that you just mentioned, these different artists, and just sitting down there and doing the aural process of learning. Yeah.
I was really into the Commodores.
Yeah.
You know? And I remember sitting down one night with that bass. Once I'd kind of gotten a handle on what's going on, and I learned the bass line to Brick House. And I was just like, couldn't believe it. Like, I can't believe this. This is so cool. You know, it's such a fun bass line. But yeah, the great thing about that time in music is that everybody had a slow jam. Hmm. So you had Easy Like Sunday Morning. You had Once, Twice, Three Times a Lady. Mm-hmm. Songs that were slow enough for the bass player when I was listening to kind of like pace yourself and make good guesses like where the song was going. I think it's probably going right here. You know, eventually you learn the song. So I ended up learning a lot of those slow jams back in the day when I was finally playing upright and electric bass.
Yeah. You're reminding me of making me think about, you know, working with music teachers, and so you're learning in those situations usually more in a traditional way. And then you're off to the side learning in a more aural way. And I know that used to drive my piano teachers crazy because, you know, I was learning classical music like a good little boy. But I was more interested. I enjoyed that music, but I love, you know, like Billy Joel and Elton John and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I wasn't interested in reading that music. Like, and it's funny about a lot of popular music because it does have syncopation in it. It's not that easy to read.
It's
rhythmically, it's
difficult.
It's much easier, I found, to learn it by ear.
Yeah.
I always thought it was funny. I'm kind of jumping around, but like when you take a musician like James Booker, one of the great New Orleans pianists, you know, and he was schooled to a degree, but like a genius pianist playing all this incredible music, and then there's somebody who transcribed that music. But I always thought it'd be funny, like, what if you put that in front of James Booker and asked him to read it?
It doesn't work like that, yeah.
Whatever he did would be brilliant, I'm sure, but like, you know. But anyway, so let's fast forward to high school now. So now are you getting involved in, you know, various ensembles? Or?
Yeah, so through middle school I kind of stayed. I was playing bass in my string groups in middle school. At a Struma Middle, and when I was going to Zach, we moved to Zachary in ninth grade, and they did not have an orchestra there. So I was able to, I'd actually gotten into the Louisiana Youth Orchestra when I was in the eighth grade. The first year it was open in 1984, and I was able to stay plugged into orchestra music as a bass player throughout high school. So I was able to round that part out. But in high school, I was like, okay, well, I'll just be in the jazz band. Well, you can't just be in the jazz band there. You got to be in the marching band too. So I played drums in the marching band all the years that I was there, and was drum major my senior year, and did that thing, which was an exposure to leadership styles and things like that. That kind of got me started doing that kind of thing.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But yeah, so in high school was great. In that, I had a really good band director, David Phillips, who really, you know, could see that you need to be involved in all the all states, and you need to kind of know what's out there. You need to prepare yourself for a college music life.
Did you ever consider anything else? I'm curious, like career-wise, did you always kind of know you were going to go into music?
I really did. I really did kind of. Mm-hmm. I've got other interests.
Sure.
You know, and I could do other things, but I just really have always felt like music was a special gift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I needed to put it to work in a certain kind of way. And I'm of course, my mother was a teacher. She was very concerned when I was in college that I was going to be a bum, you know. so she really leaned on me to get an education degree, to become a teacher. She, you know, and it was really the smartest thing. It plugged me into this community for the long term. I've gotten to contribute to so many young people's music experience from just staying here.
Right.
You know, this will be year 30 coming up in the school system. And, you know, it's given me a chance to work with adults, you know, doing music and spreading that, making Baton Rouge a more musical town. I feel like if you can just flood a culture with more music, it's going to make it better.
Amen to that. And yes, you are a huge part of that, have been for many years. You were referring to, I believe, your adult music club, which is a venture that you've been at that for a while.
About 14 years now.
And that's a real gift to our community because it's a chance for adults of all ages to learn more about well, let me let you explain it because you're the one who actually does it. But what is that?
So, Adult Music Club is an experience where people meet twice a month. Some of them are meeting more than that now because they've got their own band. But they meet with me twice a month, and I teach them how to play in a band.
Mm-hmm.
So that may involve teaching them a brand new instrument. It may involve getting them acclimated to playing with other people if they've just been playing by themselves. And again, going back to learning the roles of these different instruments, you know. So this gives us a chance to do that. We've been doing this for a long time, and we've got a bunch of bands out there currently who have graduated and are doing their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
The current crop of I've got two new groups that are doing really well.
I can't wait to hear the names. This is always the best part.
I've got a really cool vocal centered group with three lady vocals, a couple of dudes singing, and it's kind of an Americana type of vibe in there. That's the Knockout Roses. And then I got another group that's kind of like a beginner group. More of a beginner group. It started with creating bass players and drummers. I got in a couple of guitar players, but that's Loud Mary.
What's it called?
Loud Mary.
Loud Mary.
Loud Mary.
Is that a play on Proud Mary?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
But louder.
And rougher, maybe?
Yeah, a little rougher. But they are getting to the point now where they've done a little bit of performing, but it's time to do some more of that. You know, I always teach people, I tell people that I teach people how to have band practice.
Hmm.
You know, if you can have a good band practice and you don't blow it. you don't make everybody mad, or if you can manage that, then you can have a band and you can have be part of a really wonderful experience in your community.
Right.
Right.
Well, I want to get into talking about your involvement in education with the younger demographic, K through 12, and you have a lot of experience in that realm. But before we do that, I'm going to play another tune. So you were showing me a tune that's kind of more or less a blues.
Mm-hmm.
That I should backtrack. So the song we started out with was one of your tunes, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you wrote that song to work with students, mm-hmm. right? What was the name of that one?
It's called Elevator Song.
Elevator Song.
Because it's supposed to be the kind of song that you might hear in an elevator.
Ah, okay. Well, and then, so the, and maybe when we get into the educational part, we can kind of break down a little bit of how your methodology and all of this. But so we're going to play another one, and this is more blues-oriented. And what is the name of this one?
It's called the Cafeteria Blues.
Cafeteria Blues.
Because as a string teacher and as a music teacher, a floating music teacher, you never know where you're going to end up teaching.
Yeah.
And for many years, it was always the cafeteria. So yeah, we wrote a song about
it. Pretty sure I taught in a closet at one point.
Thank you.
Cafeteria blues.
That's right.
Well, I'm thinking of like the smell of those those bread buns that would
those
come
buns,
out.
Those buns, yeah.
It's that's the official smell of a school
cafeteria.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to talk to you about, you know, your experiences with education, and you've dealt a lot with a wide range of ages with students. And the times that I've worked with you over the years, it's been primarily high school, some middle school, but you've also spent a lot of time with younger kids.
Mm-hmm.
What have your experiences have been with that, and especially the younger kids, and the joys and pains of doing that?
You know, I always tell people that I just teach the same things, mm-hmm. you know. And when you're working with music, it's really wonderful in that way that with music, we're always just trying to take the next step,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so every musical kid is at a different place. And if you can help them take that next step, you know, then that's really, everyone appreciates that. They appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting something out of it. You're getting some movement. You're able to start a direction for a young person, you know. And it can be, because a lot of my students come to me and they're very accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're very good players. But they can't do everything. You know,
there's always something that needs to be worked.
There's always something, and there's always something that's really important
mm-hmm.
that would really make their musical life in the future much richer if yeah. they could improvise, compose, do these things to meet whatever musical moment is waiting for you in the future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so in that regard. Teaching young people, elementary, middle, or high school kids, it's all the same thing. Or adults, mm-hmm. you know, it's always the same. Music is so wonderful that way.
It's
you know, it's got a space for everybody,
mm-hmm.
and it really loves improvement.
Right.
You know, and I'm slowly improving in my life. I feel like, you know, just over time, it's such a long process.
Yeah,
and you want to, and you discover other things that you want to improve upon, and it becomes very consuming.
There's a famous quote by I want to say a famous cellist. I can't remember who it is.
Oh, you talking about Pablo Casals?
Oh yeah, where they're like, well, I forget how he's way up in age, and they're like, well, you still practice? Like, why are you? You know, I think I notice improvement.
I think I'm getting better.
yeah, you're right. You know, I totally agree with that, and I think it's. Music is such a, the endeavor of learning music is such a humbling experience. Every time I go to the instrument, it's a humbling experience. Like, I hear so many things I need to work on.
Mm-hmm.
It's satisfying because, you know, you're playing music. But if you're really listening to what you're doing and you're open and you're receptive, then you realize, oh, yeah, there's so much more to deal with, you know, and that's as a teacher and watching students develop, sometimes I would kind of put a question mark over certain students who like had just entirely too much confidence for what they're. It's good to be confident as a player,
yeah.
but like, you know, I'm glad you feel like you're good, but you're not that good. Like,
yeah.
even though, I don't care how good you are,
yeah,
you're still not that good because there's so much more to work on, you know. And going back to the being humble, it teaches you to be humble if you're really listening to and receptive to where you're at. You know
yes.
what I mean? That's to me, that's always a great thing about music education and learning an instrument, learning any art for that matter.
Well, I always find it a personal challenge. Like I've got a group of kids that are in elementary school, and they're all really good piano players,
mm-hmm.
And we try to use the elements of their practice as a creative tool, you know. So if I feel like if as a music teacher teaching advanced kids, if you can teach them a creative process where they can then begin to digest and break down all of the technical and the theoretical and you know the the feelings involved too, because they, sure, they're playing with great feeling, you mm-hmm. know. But if they can use these things to then create some new music or begin to appreciate people that do create, like jazz players, the way that they approach the instrument, you know, this is one of the things that I feel like I'm responsible for, is taking these kids who have this very generous gift of ability and turning their direction into something that they may be avoiding because they think it's too hard or it's not available to them. If you if they can turn that corner, bring that talent into their adult life, and continue to play,
right?
Then I think that that would have been such a that would be such a great outcome.
Absolutely, you know, and you do it long enough, and you watch these students, the ones who actually really pursue it, and make a career out of it. The way they In many cases, not all cases, but in many cases, the way they remain a part of your life, you remain a part of their life.
Yeah,
you know, and that's a really special thing.
That's a very special thing.
You know, there's something like when you mentor to anyone, you know, there's a connection there, and then to watch that person see their career develop and do whatever they're going to do, and to know you've been a part of that.
Well, and they're just joining a process that's already underway.
Yeah, as we did with our teachers.
As we did with our teachers, because we've got those same people.
Right.
You know, and that's the thing about music. I'm sure it's like that in other disciplines, I guess, but music just seems to be so perfectly situated for that, you know, to maintain relationships with your mentors, people who are older, getting to know people who are younger, maintaining these things, because it really is about relationships and about the life that you build around you, you know.
Right.
And if it can be more musical with more musical people,
yeah,
you know, then it's got to be happier.
Well, and I want to express to the listeners and viewers, you know, one of the things I've always appreciated about you in particular is you've always been so open-minded musically, and consequently so very good at so many genres of music. And I've always valued that in any player. Like, you know, there you have those who really specialize in a thing, and that's kind of, you know, that's the path they go down.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, to let the listeners and viewers know, I mean, you have a classical background. You're very at home playing blues, jazz, folk music, rock. I mean, I could just go down the list of genres, and you're not scared of any of them. I mean, you embrace it all. Gypsy music. We play together sometimes with Patrick Bordenlein, our mutual friend. But that's just a great quality, I think. And it, not only that, but it, thinking on a more macro scale, like, it just really helps the community, you know?
Well, I think that result of like being able to play these different kinds of music is directly related to being in Baton Rouge.
Mm.
Baton Rouge is a little isolated,
right?
You know,
yeah.
But because it is kind of a closed set in a way, different pockets of interest develop. You know, like Of course, you've got a blues scene here.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a musician, you should know about the blues scene. You should participate in the blues scene. You should people should know who you are.
Yeah.
You know, that you could walk in and pick up an instrument on any stage with these guys, and, you know, within a certain amount of, you know, some rules, I guess, but you should be welcome up there.
Right.
Because you're a frequent participant, you know. The rock and roll thing, you know, you should know the rock and rollers,
right?
You know, the jazz guys. And that's always been a goal. I always wanted to participate in as many of the local genres that I could find, because I knew that everybody was making music. Everybody was musical, and I wanted to make sure that I could be musical with whoever I met in Baton Rouge.
Right, and I've always, and I know you probably most certainly feel the same way, but when you do play other styles of music and you play with other musicians, you know, you inevitably learn But it also brings more back to whatever other genre you're jumping back to, you know, just having different perspectives, different ways of hearing, you know.
Different ways of hearing, and I loved the way that switching genres gives you a break mm-hmm. from your previous mindset, right. And that when you return to your jazz thing, you've now been informed by your rock gig.
Right, right.
And you hit it with a different kind mm-hmm. of spin. You kind of right. hit it. It all comes out a little bit differently, you know. And I love that, you know, you pick up certain things with orchestra music. You learn about dynamics, and that makes such a great complement to what you would do in a jazz scene, you know.
Right.
You learn about quiet dynamics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I went to go see a show at Cindy Wonderful's Wonderground, which is a venue back on Laurel Street, kind of a art space mm-hmm. for creative people. Yeah. And there was a concert there. It was heavy music. It was like there was a band traveling from Virginia, mm-hmm. and they had a couple of local openers there. And that's such a great tradition to have a couple of local bands support a touring band mm-hmm. that's coming through. They usually donate the money to the touring band because that's kind of the, right. you know, the courtesy. But I just enjoyed hearing this really, really loud, heavy, heavy music, you know,
right, right, right.
Because I like it all.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, man. Well, so what are you excited about? What's coming up? Yeah, well, we were just talking prior to filming. You've been doing a film,
yeah,
a movie.
I've spent 3 weeks in Magdalena, New Mexico.
Yeah,
in a Ross Brothers film movie called Edge City.
Okay,
and
tell us about that.
I was kind of a dusty guitar player, musician kind of guy in a bar, and with my very good friend Casey McAllister. Mm-hmm. Casey is my oldest musical friend.
Mm-hmm.
We both went to a Struma Middle and hung out back in the day doing music stuff,
yeah.
Trying to make it work. But he has been a film composer for some time and has worked with these guys for on 6 or 7 films.
Mm-hmm.
And he called me because the film that he was working on required some musicians yeah. to be on the set. So I was able to go and kind of get into the film world, which was very cool. I yeah. love the way they do what they do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're arranging a lot of different parts. There were about 50 people out there involved in this movie. And it was a wonderful small town, and I just loved it. It
yeah.
was great. So, yeah, that it'll probably be out in 2 years.
Okay. Yeah. That's exciting.
Yeah, very exciting. I got to be kind of a Western Dave. I got got to go get some cowboy shirts and some bolos, yeah. and I just felt supernatural.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, though, but this isn't the first film you've been in, right?
It's not. I was also in a film called Blaze.
Okay.
Did
that have, who's the very well-known?
Not the Blaze, not the old Blaze about Earl Long.
Right,
That's another Blaze.
Right.
Made in the 80s. This is about Blaze Foley, who was a singer-songwriter in Austin.
There was some star power in that.
Ethan Hawke directed
Ethan Hawke, that's who I'm trying to think of, yeah.
And we filmed it in Zachary and St. Francisville. And mm-hmm. I have a lot of very dear friends in the St. Francisville community, again, through the music and mm-hmm. and stuff. But they contacted me to be a part of that when they saw that that was taking shape.
Right.
So it's been my second role as a guy in a bar.
You've been stereotyped already.
Been stereotyped, yeah.
Well, and so you're still involved in teaching, so you're going to do a few more years. What you think?
Yeah, this will be year 30, and I plan to retire soon, and I might do a few more years with the drop, you know, mm-hmm. stay in town. And so I like to think that this is my senior year, and then yeah. I'm going to junior college.
Gotcha.
You know, a couple of yeah. years after that. And then we'll see. We'll see. My wife is not far from retirement, and she's mm-hmm. a wild one. We might want to go somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. definitely want to go have some fun.
Shout out to your wife, the Mel, who's just a wonderful cook. Just letting everybody
yeah.
know.
She is wonderful.
Well, I'm glad to hear you're going to stick around in the school system for a little while longer. Those kids are, they don't know how lucky they are.
Well, thank
I'll
you.
I'll just say it.
It's given me a little bit of perspective on, like, okay, if you're going to do anything, you got to do it now. Like,
yeah.
If you want to say something, or if you have anything left to say to these people, say it now.
Right.
You know, and so I've been thinking about that, and I really want to tell the kids that are into it, stay into it, go for it, be a musician.
Yeah.
Why not?
Right.
You know, people are lots of different kinds of things. You don't know whether that's going to lead you to a path of prosperity or not. But
you never know. But
if you've got the talent, you must continue.
And it's, to me, it's regardless of whatever success you have as far as making a living, that whole aspect, just the growth and satisfaction you have of sticking with it, and it just feeds your soul. I'll just say it. You know, being involved in the arts and playing music especially.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything, any better therapy, quite frankly, throughout life, my life.
But it's different than listening to music. Listening to music is great. Mm-hmm. Playing music is something different entirely, and
right.
and is such a, like you say, such an effective dynamic in your life.
Right. Especially when you do it with other people.
Especially when you do it with other people. Create some very, very special moments, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. and special moments is what we value in our relationships,
sure.
you know.
Yeah.
I'm always grateful, and I got this support right here in Baton Rouge, and that's the interesting part about the story is that you know, all the fun things that I get to do with music, it's really, of course, my parents had a lot to do with it, but I did come up through the East Baton Rouge Parish system,
mm-hmm.
participating in the music programs, you know, and there were bumpy times.
Sure.
I had a bunch of different string teachers in elementary school, you mm-hmm. know, but I got a little something out of all of them.
Sure.
You know, got more stability in my teaching life later on, you know, as I had some more teachers that stuck around
sure.
longer.
Yeah.
So it's been really cool that it's all happened right here.
Yeah, you're right. We didn't get too deep into the weeds about you know, real teaching techniques and all that business, because I know you're very, very creative when it comes to that. But I want to let the listeners know that the two songs that we played thus far are original songs you wrote for the students,
mm-hmm.
which is another example of just how, you know, creative Dave can be, and just in the moment, if you will, for the given situations you're presented as a teacher. And we're going to end, because we are kind of nearing that time, with another original that you wrote for your students.
Mm-hmm.
And what's this one called?
This is called La Cumbia Fria.
And tell me the story behind
okay,
this one.
Okay, so every year there's a Hispanic celebration at our elementary school, and really close friends with a couple of the teachers there that one is from Mexico, one is from El Salvador,
mm-hmm.
and they challenged me to think out of the box a little bit. Like, come on, you need to come up. Do you know about cumbia music? Which I did a little bit, but they again showed me, like, this is what you ought to be thinking about. You know, this is the kind of music that we like to listen to, and I recognize it. Like, yeah, it sounds. Like, I get this. I understand this. So
right.
It's a simple thing. We decided to come up with a little tune, and we named it La Cumbia Fria because our classroom is on the end of a hall where the air conditioning is fierce. So our room always kind of stays about 60 degrees, you know. It's just freezing in there. Yeah,
which is great for finger movement when you're trying to play an instrument.
But we would all have scarves and everything. And I'd be in there all day and my core temperature's dropping. So we decided to call it La Cumbia Fria. And the kids really like it, and it gives them a chance. So the piece is structured in a way that there's a main little melody. There's some things that must be done.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are some things that can be done if you choose to do them at these certain spots. You know, so it gets them thinking about it and sort of waiting, like maybe I'll take this little shot here and see what happens.
Right.
So it gives them a chance, gives them kind of a limited set of things that they can do to try during the song.
So
it's part of it. I think I stole a little bit because I always steal a little bit.
Yeah.
And I teach the kids to steal.
Don't we all?
We call it stealing hubcaps. So there's a part of the song that's right out of Hit the Road, Jack.
Yep. We can't go wrong with that.
But you can't go wrong. And, you know, there's a lot of songs that do that. But it's fun. It's fun to be able to show the kids, hey, look, we stole this part from this song. And they're like, ooh, you're going to get in trouble.
Well, before we launch into it, I want to thank you again for being part of this.
Thanks for having me. This is really
you're
fun.
Such an old dear friend. And always love playing with music with you, hanging with you, learning from you. And
good times.
Again, thanks, man.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Arts Council of Greater Baton Rouge would like to acknowledge our generous sponsors, the Shell Corporation, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Louisiana Office of Cultural Development, and the City of Baton Rouge.